The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, joined again by Sam Robson. Sam, I would say long time no talk, but it's only been two nights since our Patreon-iversary pod. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a short time between drinks, but I'm doing just as well, hairs ever longer, but yeah, I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Terrific, I'm good to go, thank you very much. And joining us, we have it on good authority, not from deepest, darkest Al Mori on this occasion, but back in the nation's capital, it is Scott McIntyre. Scott, welcome back to the podcast.
Good evening, Mr. Maxwell and Mr. Robson. It is deep and darker because I'm in... I'm actually homeless, so I don't have a house, but I'm in what is a local park, and it's really kind of foggy, and there's a lot of trees around, and there's all sorts of really eccentric characters that hang out here, including this woman that does this amazing operatic Italian singing, but she doesn't appear to be here tonight. But if at some point during the recording she does turn up, I'll make sure that I move close enough, not as close as I was in the bars in Tohoku, but close enough so you can get a sense of the park as well.
And a grab of music for the intro. That would be wonderful. Yeah, but as you say, maybe the slightly inclement weather has scared that lady off on this occasion. But we'll keep us posted, Scott. All right. So on this episode, yes, we'll have a chat with Scott about the lie of the land, I suppose, in terms of a J-League return. There are games currently scheduled for all three divisions for the second weekend in June. We'll get Scott's thoughts on whether he thinks that's realistic or not. A spoiler alert, I'm guessing he's going to say it isn't. And while he's here, of course, we'll get his thoughts on what could possibly happen with the Asian Champions League this season. If we think the J-League's up in the air, then the ACL is, we'll get Scott's thoughts on it. But first, Sam, I want to make sure I fill you in so I don't forget later on. I teased on the Patreon-iversary pod that I know who won the Levain Cup in 2020, and that made you very happy because that means they won't have to play play any of the group stage games, or indeed latterly the prime stage games, or whatever they're called these days. And I know because Patreon supporter Mike I was very intrigued, I guess, by our discussion on how we would reshape the Levain Cup on our last main pod episode, and he decided to basically simulate the 2020 Levain Cup using our format of giving eight teams a bye in the first round and then doing knockout all the way through. He did it slightly differently, where he didn't give the top eight teams from J1 a bye. He did eight random teams. And interestingly enough, the last team that got a bye, the eighth bye team, actually ended up being the winners of the tournament. But I won't spoil it for you just yet. But yeah, so eight teams got a bye. They were ranging from J1, Yokohama Marinos, down to a couple of teams from J3. And then, Sam, are you familiar with a game from the 70s called Logacta Chart Soccer?
I'm not, I'm afraid. I'm intrigued by it, but I'm not familiar with it.
Well, Mike said he didn't have his copy of the game anymore, but he basically remembered how it worked. So if you wanted to Google it at home, listeners, it's Logacta Chart Soccer, Logacta Chart Soccer. It's basically a game that you play with two different dice, I think, anyway, you can basically play cup competitions or league competitions using dice to simulate the number of goals scored in games, etc. So, yeah, Micah did it from, as I say, giving eight teams a bye in the first round and then playing knockout through to the latter stages. And as I call up his DM on Twitter, because I wanted to make sure I got Logacta right, I'll let you know from the semi-final stage, basically. The semi-finals were Cerezo Osaka versus Sendai and Shonan versus Niigata, and both were absolute ball bearers. Sendai won 4-3 over Cerezo after extra time, and Shonan beat Niigata 4-2 on penalties after a 3-all draw. So the final was between Sendai and Shonan, and Vegalta Sendai fans will be very pleased to know that they captured their first major trophy. As the dice came up their way, they beat Shonan 3-2 in the final. So what a triumph for the Yurtec Stadium mob. Thanks, Mike, for doing that, and that means now that the J-League doesn't have to play the Levain Cup, and that's a huge weight off their shoulders in terms of scheduling for the rest of the season. So well done to Mike for that. Thanks for filling me in on it, and now I've filled the listeners in. And once again, it's Logacta Chart Soccer. I think it came out in the mid-1970s, so I don't know if you can chase down a copy of it in the shops these days, but the formula for how you play the game, I guess, is online elsewhere as well. So there you go. Vegalta won it.
Oh, magnificent. Congratulations to Vegalta, and a message to the J-League. That can be the format for future Levain Cups. All cup ties settled by dice. So I think that's the way forward.
Indeed. I'm actually surprised that nobody that I've seen anyway online has been simulating all these games, Scott. We're basically supposed to be about 12... games through the J1 season, and I think on the day this podcast will come out, on the Wednesday, the 6th of May, that was scheduled to be the 14th match day in J2, and what was it, the 9th in J3. So obviously we were supposed to be a fair whack of the way into the season, and I was somebody might be simulating games either on Football Manager or on FIFA 20 or something like that, but I haven't come across anything. You haven't either, I suppose, have you?
No, it's not a bad idea, but I mean, sometimes it's hard enough actually watching these things in reality, let alone in some kind of a virtual reality. It's great to see the judge steering Vegalta Sendai into the ACL next year, and Niigata getting there as well. Do you follow this new coach on Twitter? This Puig, I think is his name, the new Niigata coach. He looks like a real real character. So disappointing to see the J1 wannabes falling at the semis there. But that's a fantastic idea, as was your idea for the whole idea of the Nabisco Cup, which I've long thought that was the way to do it anyway, right? A League Cup should be the top three divisions in whatever way you can condense it down. And hopefully these Corona times. By the way, I really want to trademark the term "love in the time of Corona," because that's going to be a novel that's definitely coming out, and you've heard it here first. So when you go to the airport next time, you see a really trashy novel called "Love in the Time of Corona." will be a reminder that I should have trademarked that. But that's a fantastic idea for the Levain Cup, and let's hope maybe these Corona times, "Love in the Time of Corona," that all these strange times lead to better ideas, and you guys had a great one.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, Chaos Energy J-League. I think Dan's got his trademark in already on that. So, loving the time of Corona. You've got plenty of time to get some paperwork sorted out, Scott. And not too many people listen to this, so I don't think you have to worry about anybody nicking your idea. So, you're good to go. You're good to go. You could probably write the book yourself with the amount of time we've all got on our hands at the moment.
You want to give me some plot ideas? I've already got the name. Maybe it can be a J-League romance novel. Who could get on in a romantic relationship with the J-League? We're open to ideas. put that out there on your socials, and then I can work around it.
Well, I definitely want the Magnet Man involved.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Maybe it's a romance between several of the Magnet Men. It's all starting to come together.
Hit us up in the comments, listeners. Answers on a postcard, etc. All right, so we're not seeing a football at least for another month, Scott. But as I said a little bit earlier, the J-League, while the state of emergency has been extended in a number of prefectures, but I think I saw last night that Prime Minister Abe was talking about easing up in certain areas of the country. But whether that means that football is going to be coming back in the next couple of months is obviously still to be determined. But yeah, as I said, there are games currently scheduled for the second weekend in June, so just over a month away. There's obviously a lot logistically that the J-League would have to get sorted out before that would even be within the realms of possibility. Do you think there is any chance that we will get football as it's currently scheduled?
I think there's some chance, but I think it's unlikely. And as I said to you right back at the start of all this, I think there's bigger issues at play rather than football. The same probably goes for the baseball. There's been a lot of whispers, but also more direct proclamations from various health experts abroad and here that they think the way that things are at the moment, it's going to be very difficult to hold the Olympics next year in their current form. And as we know from Japan's initial reaction to all this, and the reason perhaps why, you know, we see football going on in other parts of Asia, in Taiwan, Korea's coming back, you know, various Central Asian republics. You know, I very much like this strong man of Turkmenistan, the leader Gurbanguly. He's actually, this is a random aside that could go into my book. He's banned the use of the word coronavirus, and if anyone is heard uttering it, he rounds them up and dutifully deals with them. But I think the bigger picture is definitely that if, say, for example, you rush back and you start games while all this is going on. And for those outside of Japan that don't know, the official tallies, and I use the word official very loosely, are still fairly serious. You know, I mean, in Tokyo alone, I think it's averaged somewhere between 100 and 200 cases in the last a couple of weeks since they've been slightly more open about it. So say, for example, the league came back and then one player or a coach or someone or other got this thing and then you needed to shut it down again. I think from my perspective and what I'm hearing elsewhere is that this is going to be a really bad look going ahead to the Olympics. So I think what they're going to do is wait until things are really clear. But I'm also hearing some disturbing claims from people at various clubs that I speak to that they've basically been told if there is anything wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with you, and it's very important that if someone does have this, it doesn't come out. The people at the various places that I talked to said, you know, there's basically now limited to no testing at all going on. You know, if you've got some kind of conditions that are serious and running for a couple of days, then, you know, it may be beholden on you to report it. Other clubs, you know, you're supposed to fill in, you know, kind of forms every day. They stop doing that after a week or two. So from what I'm hearing, it's there's no other way to say it. It's very concerning that there's a completely lackadaisical attitude to this. Well, that's the way it is across Japan, we can say, but people are, I think, are completely kidding themselves if they don't think that, you know, a sizable percentage of people living in Japan, let alone people working in and around the J-League, have this thing. You know, there's a lot of talk about all this people who are asymptomatic that are walking around carrying it and then just spreading it willy-nilly to other people. The cynics in Japan suggested that may not necessarily displease the government, who could engage in some kind of a mass cull of the elderly population, which reduces the pension burden upon the nation. But I think anyone with half a sense of what's going on knows that there's a hell of a lot of people just walking around every day on the streets that have either had this thing or have got it without symptoms. And if you think that's not hitting the J-League, then you're completely naive. So the key questions then is what will be the J-League's response? As we've seen in other nations that are preparing to return, I believe it happened in Germany, that it was mandatory testing right across the league. And you know, even there, a few, you know, whatever it was, officials or players or whatever were revealed to have this thing. So does the J-League have the balls to do this? And I bet you they don't. Because I bet you if they did, either the numbers are going to be out of control and the country doesn't want that because, you know, whatever reason, they don't want to overwhelm the health system, they don't want to create panic, and certainly they don't want to impact the Olympics. So I think a lot of it is going to come down to all these situations, right? Do you come back in June when it seems like the numbers are still going to be even these official ones? And Ben, you know how hard it is. I have had some friends and associates here who've had all sorts of high fevers and temperatures. They've gone to hospitals. They begged doctors to get a test, and they've simply said, "No, go away. Come back if you're like almost on death's door." So it's extremely difficult to get a test, even if you want one, and even if you're begging for one. So what happens? I mean, do they risk coming back in June, and you can't put anything beyond beyond Japan the way that they've dealt with it generally? So I have to say that it wouldn't totally surprise me if they did, but I think it's a risk, and it's a risk with really big implications, ones that are the bigger than the J-League. So what I think they want to do is wait until things have officially gone down. But if we say, you know, from what I'm hearing from various clubs that, you know, nothing really serious is being done, and I would love, let's hear this from the J-League. Let's have some of these journalists who are sitting in on all these press conferences or whatever come out and directly ask the question: will you engage in 100% testing of all coaches and players? And let's put it on the line and put it to them and see what they've actually got to say, because I'd be really fascinated to hear that answer. I suspect the answer is no, they won't. The problem is, if someone gets it and then they get it seriously, then you know the whole shebang is off. So, geez, I don't know, Ben. My personal opinion is I don't think they'll come back that soon, but I can't rule it out. And if they did come back, let's really wait for what happens, because, yeah, if someone then comes out and gets it after it, it's really going to be a big thing. So if I'm betting right now, I don't think it'll be back now. I think it'll be back later in the summer. I think it'll be back as a single round kind of thing that, as I said, you're right back at the start as well. It won't be called the J-League, it'll be called something else. We'll just roll out our way through the year and hope that nothing gets in the way of the Olympics and then on to the J-League return proper next year.
All right, then. So, yeah, it was 5 weeks ago, as I said, that your last appearance, and that was the day of Gotoku Sakai's that it was confirmed that he had contracted the virus, right? And we spoke on that episode about you'd been in touch with Peter Klimovsky down at Shimizu and Ange Postecoglou and some of his staff at Yokohama F. Marinos. And at that time, things were very much business as usual in terms of training, etc. We presumed that Sakai's positive test would probably get the wheels in motion for a gradual shutdown of teams training on a daily basis, and that did finally happen, I think, a week or two later. Have you been in touch
with... but it didn't happen as a result of J-League action, right? It happened as a result of individual clubs taking it upon themselves, and some clubs stopped at this point, some stopped at that point, some said, well, we weren't covered by the initial state of emergency, so we'll only do it when we are. So again, it comes back to questions about leadership of the J-League on this thing. Why isn't there mass testing being done? Why isn't there regulations in place? And I know certainly from speaking to people quite high up in FIFPro, the global players union, that they are absolutely cooking at the response within Japan, I believe that there's going to be a really heavy investigation coming from FIFPro, looking into the J-League, looking into the links between broadcasters and the leagues. What was the reason that there wasn't a shutdown during a state of emergency? And I have to say, clubs are returning to training, Ben.
Well, that's what I was just about to ask you.
So I believe several clubs are back in training immediately, basically Thursday, as soon as the Golden Week holiday is done. So even when you've got an extension of the nationwide state of emergency, still you've got clubs going, well, stuff it, we're just going to go and do it. We're going to do what we want to do anyway, right? So where is the J-League? Where is the leadership coming from this? Let's hear from them, right? All we've heard from is these just ridiculous continued delays and postponements. Let's have some leadership. The goddamn head of the JFA got it, for crying out loud, right? So let's see some leadership from the J-League, where they come out and they set the agenda. Yes, we're going to do widespread testing because A, B, C, and D. No, we're not going to do it because of blah, 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 blah. And let's get some of the, let's see some of the journalists, not just copying what they say, but actually investigating and asking strong questions that need to be asked. Because what kind of a way is it to run the league in this? You just, I mean, I think they're hiding information that they're not doing tests that they should be doing, and they're allowing teams to go back into training in the middle of a goddamn nationwide state of emergency. It's just it's completely absurd.
I was going to ask, basically, if the league is going to continue to be delayed into the late summer or not, could you see or would you be on board with a view of moving the J-League to a starting in September, finishing in May and playing a full round and finishing in time for the Olympics next year? Or would you be completely against a shift in schedule like that?
In theory, I don't mind it, but you're kind of chasing your tail continually to get where you need to be, because then you need to break then for the Olympics. And is Sam, do you mean this as a permanent kind of shift where you're shifting the calendar or as a one-off?
It doesn't need to be permanent, but I think maybe just because of this situation, you could finish it just in time for the Olympics, and then maybe you can keep it because the World Cup is obviously a different time, so you're going to have to mess with your schedule anyway. Could it be for 3 years, you've got really kind of hodgepodge of a bit of a schedule that you can just have to work around these things before reverting back to normal?
Well, I mean, yeah, in theory, maybe, but the problem here, I think in Japan particularly, is a geographical one. So you couldn't, I mean, from November through till March, you can't play games anywhere, from Yamagata, say, upwards, because that half of the country is covered in snow. So you would need to, you'd need to then, maybe...
They can all go and play in Perth, Scott.
Well, that's exactly right. The great Premier League plan. Well, I don't know. They could probably go and play in Okinawa. But I don't think it's feasible in the case of Japan, just because of those climatic issues. Unless they keep stretching it for another 20 years, by which time global warming has really done its business, and then we'll all be playing exclusively in Hokkaido anyway.
Yeah. And just on the testing that you were on about, and how you kind of need the teams to all be tested before any sort of return to football. Do you think the feeling would be okay amongst the wider public, really, if the footballers were being tested and everyone was being tested like that, but you weren't getting the tests required for, say, medical workers or key workers or all those sorts of people? Is that a kind of barrier that would have to be get across?
Not the same as it is in Europe, because my take on things here in Japan more generally is that the government is doing everything within its powers to ensure that people don't get tested, because they don't want the numbers coming out. And once they'd gone down that path, because they were desperately trying to protect the Olympics, it was already too late, right? In that whatever it was, that 4 week period that the rest of the world had kind of shut down, and they held on because people, there's absolutely no question it was recycling its way right around the community. And if they mass tested people in this country now, the numbers would, in my opinion, be absolutely terrifying. Like how many people have had this or will have it. And that's why I can't see any way whatsoever that the J-League will even suggest that testing is going on, because the clubs and the people that I've spoken to, that's certainly not the case. At those clubs, there's been no requirement to do it from the J-League outside of this, kind of take your own temperature. And I heard from several clubs that they said take your own temperature, but they didn't even give them thermometers to do so. So I think, that kind of business went pretty quickly out the window as well. So if there's no direction coming from the J-League, there's no uniform direction coming from the clubs, what kind of people with a brain think that this is not already a huge issue at these clubs? So really, the J-League can't risk, in my opinion, they can't risk coming out and insisting on doing tests, or they're not coming back, not only not coming back in June, they're not coming back till next year. So, but if they don't, then you're running into the issues that I said with FIFPro, which I don't believe anyone in Japan has reported this story yet. But keep your ears and eyes peeled for that, because I think in the next couple of weeks that's going to be a real big story. If you've got the Global Players Union coming down on Japan and saying, listen, 90% of our members around the world have been, training in their back garden here. You've been running around playing games for the benefit of TV and putting, our members in and their families in harm's way. So, this is an issue that Japan's going to have to deal with. And I can see it really getting completely ugly quite quickly.
You know, with this return to training or whatnot, is it just basically training as normal, or have they socially distanced players around? I know in the UK we've got large training complexes, so you've got everyone has a pitch basically, and only half the players are in at a time or a certain number. Is that what it's going to be like in Japan, or is it just business as usual?
No, there's no, this is what I keep coming back to. There is no uniform direction from the J-League. So it's up to individual clubs to do what they want to do. Some clubs may be more responsible and say we won't train. Some will. And this is the problem. Ben referenced it at the head because, although this nationwide, state of emergency, is continuing, there's a, I believe there's a review on the 14th of May, which, suggests it may somehow revert back to the original seven. Where Tokyo, Osaka, Nagoya, Fukuoka, Hokkaido, and whatever the other two were, Kanagawa and somewhere else, that outside of those seven, then things may be. So then how can you have a situation where you say, okay, there's a lot of teams in and around that area, but then the others can train and get ready to play, but these ones can't, and some of these are doing it anyway and some aren't. It's just, it's a complete mess. And where on earth is the J-League and the direction from the J-League in all of this? They're putting their heads up to speak to the sycophants who just copy their words to delay the league, every second week or whatever. But where's the serious questions that need to be asked and are rightly being asked in other parts of the world?
Yeah, so, I mean, you don't want to throw anyone under the bus here, Scott, but you're obviously very well connected at a couple of clubs. And, yeah, if clubs are starting to return to training, are you hearing from anybody that they might consider going on strike? They might not feel it's safe for them to go back to business as usual because, I mean, as we know, we believed that we were leading a charmed life here for a very long time until they cancelled the Olympics. And then, yeah, we saw this huge spike in the number of cases, especially in Tokyo Prefecture, but obviously in a lot of other areas of Japan as well. So, numbers were being swept under the carpet for a long time. And as we know, I mean, training games were still going on for DAZN's sake for a couple of weeks after the league shut down. And there was finally, an end to training as usual. But as we say, yeah, it's returning this week. So are you hearing is there any kind of reticence from certain parties about getting back to work?
Yeah, absolutely there is. But this is like it is in any walk of life. You know what it's like where you work, Ben, or in your circles of friends. I'm sure it's the same with Sam, that, you know, some people are skeptical about this whole thing. Some people are, you know, not leaving the house without, full kind of body armor on and then all the kind of opinions on that in between. So football's no different. You know, some people just want to get back and play. Some people are really concerned about what's going on. But I think the biggest issue that the J-League's going to have to deal with is FIFA, because why should Japan be any different to the rest of the world? You've got, you know, hundreds of cases being confirmed on a daily basis. You're in the midst of a nationwide state of emergency, and football clubs think it prudent to go out and train pretty much business as usual. And, you know, so some of the situations I've heard, in one situation they were told, I think the numbers were either you can train in five groups of six or you can train in two groups of 15. It's your choice. So this is nothing of it even makes any kind of sense, you know. So they go, well, hang on, we should be doing this social distancing palaver, but what does it mean? We'll do it that way. Right. This is how they are because there's no direction coming from the J-League. So, yeah. Let's wait and see if there is any of that kind of direction. And yeah, you know, like I said, my belief in all of this is that things are being arranged at a much higher level than either the J-League or the baseball themselves. And the priority now, as it was then, is just to make sure that, you know, that a way is found to ensure that the Olympics go ahead next year. And, you know, if that means putting the J-League back until it's completely safe to do so, I think that's what will happen if there's a push that we need to get things back to seeming normality as soon as possible. And that means hushing up anybody. And like I said, I've been told that was what clubs were told to do. If anyone did have symptoms of this, it was not to come out publicly under any circumstances. So if you have that as the backdrop, then maybe you know, they can just say, we're going to come back June 13 and, you know, X and X, you know, player from X and X club isn't spotted for a month and he's got a hamstring injury.
Sorry to kind of throw this one at you, but the Korean League obviously starts this weekend. Do you know kind of how the K-League have dealt with this and what lessons could be learned from the J-League if they were willing to learn any lessons from the way that the Korean FA have been dealing with this?
Well, it comes back from what I think to the way that the thing was dealt with more generally, right? So Korea were one of the first countries to have a real explosion in it with this one kind of religious character who yeah. somehow passed through his entire congregation.
That was a woman, wasn't it?
Was it? But then what you saw in Korea was that they were really, you know, completely on top of it. I think if you look at the number of tests per capita, they're way up there. And, you know, they were one of the first countries to get onto all this, some kind of, what do you call it, this contact tracing. So, you know, they had fleets of people coming in and, you know, the official numbers coming out from Korea, but looked very, very positive. They felt they were in a position, to return to this. But Japan is one of the few nations, on earth keeping company with, really some of the upstanding kind of global leaders from, you know, Nicaragua, Mr. Bolsonaro from Brazil, Mr. Trump, my mate Gurbanguly from Turkmenistan. So this is the kind of company that Abe is hanging out with. It's no secret that he's best friends with Mr. Trump anyway. So this was Japan's reaction generally. They, you know, I often make this point, Japanese people think they're special. You often hear this, you know, Japan is different because we have four seasons in Japan. You know, I think they're the only nation. And this is my explanation for why things are very different in Japan, because they have four seasons. So because they have four seasons, they can just do whatever they want, even in the midst of a global pandemic, and pretend it's not happening. So if that's happening at a national government level, then, yeah, football is really kind of small fry compared to all of that. But Korea, it seems that they acted swiftly. It seems that they got on top of it early. And as a result, they've been able to get football back. You look at some of the other cases in New Zealand, for example, Australia as well, that really got onto it and have really kept it very strict and serious. So things are coming back to normality in those countries as well. I think the rugby league is coming back in Australia in a couple of weeks. You know, the team from New Zealand has been cleared to travel across to Australia and play. So things are coming back in Korea. Taiwan, another nation that really got on top of this early. Their league's been running for quite a while. So the nations that got on top of it early on, there was a report also this week that the A-League is coming back, I think in a month or so as well, you know, and dealt with it quite early, are the ones that have been able to get back to all sorts of life, including football, early. But Japan still now is really not treating this thing as seriously as perhaps they should. And as a result, who knows when it's going to end. But also, they've got an amazing capacity to just basically lie, to lie about everything from the government level on down. And you know, that could result in the deaths of loads of old people. But yeah, that seems that that's a price that they're prepared to pay to make sure that the Olympics goes ahead. And yeah, so really, you know, I'm almost now talking around myself around to say maybe it will come back in June, because you don't know. I mean, really, at this point in time, who knows what's going to happen? But is it the right thing to do? Absolutely not. Could it happen? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it can.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, so from the J-League to another organisation you've got an awful lot of time for, Scott, the AFC. And what will happen with the 2020 Asian Champions League? As we've just spelled out, you know, Korea, Australia are two nations whose club sides play in the Asian Champions League, who have done tremendously well in terms of containing, I suppose, if that's the right word, the coronavirus. China, the source of the entire thing from the start has apparently things are a lot better there. But elsewhere on the continent, obviously things are at various stages of dealing with things. Obviously travel across borders is still a massive issue, and it will be for a long time to come, seemingly. So I meant to ask you about this 5 weeks ago. So you've had 5 weeks to think about what you think is going to happen in terms of the Asian Champions League, and how likely it is to to run its course, considering that all of the domestic leagues have to run their course roughly in the allotted period of time that they're supposed to run.
Yeah, you know, the word out of Kuala Lumpur is that they're still planning for things to go ahead. And somehow, I was going to say be concluded, but in many cases, they haven't even started because clubs had buys early on. So, you've got some teams that have played a couple of games in the group stage and some have played none. But I think the point that you made there, Ben, is the most salient one, is that, how can you simply move from place to place? Because, pretty much every country right around the continent has travel bans in place. Australia is saying that they... that the ban there may last for another full year, so that nobody except for citizens or their family can come in. So, maybe some people have suggested this crazy thing about Perth would have played in a central location, but you couldn't even do that because then you couldn't. Say you're a Sydney FC or someone, and you've got your four or five foreigners. You couldn't take them with you, or they wouldn't be able to then re-enter to Australia. So, it's and obviously the same is going here with Japan. I think there's 27 nations that are banned from entry to Japan, including Australia, Korea, China, Iran, pretty much every single nation that's playing in the ACL. So they can't come in here. Others can't come and go. And who knows? Even if things are contained domestically, and perhaps we look at some of the nations that have done it well are the island nations, right? So Taiwan, Australia, and New Zealand's not part of this discussion, but Korea, the southern half as a peninsula. So it's easier for them to say, we'll just keep the border shut for another, X amount of months or whatever. We'll make sure that we really completely, rid of this thing. So. And then, you've got the situation, for example, in the West, in Iran, obviously, it was really catastrophic. In other nations have really been dealing heavily with these things as well. So, I don't see any way, at all that you could even contemplate how you could get through any form of a normal ACL. The simplest thing would be just to go back to a straight kind of knockout thing to reduce the number of matches. Not particularly fair on the teams that have already started well, but even that, how can it happen? It simply can't happen when there's all sorts of travel bans in place. There's no way it can happen. And you also touched on another good point is every, when these leagues do come back domestically, everyone is going to be completely pushing stuff uphill to, even get through any kind of, what could constitute a normal league. We've already seen in Japan, they're saying whatever it is, there's a benchmark of whatever, I think 70 or 75% of the season qualifies it as a proper season. So that requires here playing right through the summer. You can't play anyway ACL games in the Middle East until, really October at the earliest because it's too bloody hot. So... it's impossible. It's simply impossible unless you wanted to cook up, some kind of a situation. What's that sport where people wrestle each other in cages? What's that called? The KFC, thing. Yeah, and then these geezers were talking about buying an island somewhere, right? And then moving everyone to that. So maybe we can get someone to fund some.
ACL Island.
You can all go and play in the Northern Marianas or something and live there for 2 months. But that would, it's not possible. It's simply not possible. But I do have a theory about how we can get around it. Do you want to hear my theory? Sam's got a theory as well. And I've, as per usual, been crapping on for way too long. So why don't we hear Sam's theory first?
Well, it wasn't really a theory, and you've already crapped on it almost straight away in your answer there. But obviously there's the talk, kind of ridiculous speculation, that the Premier League could move to Perth to finish off this season. It's never, ever going to happen. But could a situation arise that they finish off the Champions League in a central location, or west or eastern location, as it would be? Like, maybe you'd have to wait till the end of the season when you've got... the smallest of chances that you could have travel between the nations. But otherwise, as you say, I can't see any way that this could be finished off.
You just can't even plan for something like that because you don't know, if you've got Australia saying it might be a year until people can come in to the country, then and that's a place that's fairly well got under control, then... Where then players and coaches and all this, would they agree to it? Getting in an aircraft, with all this crap cycling through air conditioners and all this, you know, it'd be a pretty big ask. I don't see any way it can be done. So what I'm proposing is that the teams that qualified for this year, so basically 2020 is written off. It's the asterisk year on the thing. There was no championship held, and we go into 2021. But what we do is the teams that qualified for 2020 maintain their spots in 2021, plus the teams that would have qualified, assuming these leagues can get played, but you need to come up with some, you know, kind of formula, whatever it is. Japan gets two spots and the Emirates get two or whatever. And then if they were the same teams that would have qualified, then you push it up and give other teams a chance as well. And then you expand it out to a big thing. And then you just do it as a straight, like what the European Champions Cup was back in the day, just basically a straight knockout the whole way. So you basically got two quotas. You've got the 20 qualifiers, the 21 qualifiers, and they all get together into a big giant thing, mix it up, make it a completely open draw, home and away knockouts, and bing, 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 down you go. You crown the 2021 champion, and then you get back to things as normal in 2022, which would see a lot of teams that might not even have a chance of getting into the ACL get into it. So maybe even if we want to expand it further, you can say, okay, we'll reduce the 2021 allotment. So we have, you know, say Japan was due to have four teams, they only have two, but we'll expand that two, and then we'll give a spot to wherever, Myanmar and a spot to Guam or wherever it may be. And in a straight, you know, home and away knockout, they actually might have a chance of going through, really. So you could get all sorts of, fairy tale, a Cinderella, loving the time of Corona, kind of great romantic stories coming through. And I think it's a great idea for how to get around this. So you just immediately you get rid of 2020, start planning for 2021, get all the little smaller teams in, give them a real shot, you know, in a just a two-legged match. Imagine what that would do for all those countries as well, struggling from all this kind of thing. You know, you have a big Urawa going down and playing. You know, there's a team in Guam. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Guam in the past, and there's a team. I don't know if they're still in the Budweiser Premier League, but they have what I think is the greatest football name anywhere in the world, which was FC Barcelona.
Okay.
So you could have a Kashima versus FC Barcelona in a two-legged tie. Yeah, I reckon it's a great idea.
It's a fantastic idea. I love it. You're going to have to do something like that, I imagine. If this ACL gets cancelled this year, then you're going to have to either appease this class of ACL teams or the next class, because if you've qualified, you expect to be able to play a Champions League round. And I imagine that if you just kind of say, oh, this league didn't happen, like this year, or next year's qualifiers don't count, you're going to have to get into various legal wranglings between them, I imagine. And it could cause quite a mess for the AFC to try and deal with that. So I think you're going to have to come to a solution, no better one than yours, to kind of involve as many teams and kind of placate as many teams as possible.
Well, yeah, I mean, Sam, you and I have already established that every cup competition works better as a straight knockout. So, Scott's come around to our way of thinking, which is terrific. And I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned Guam there because, the AFC can't use Perth if the Premier League are going to. But how many football pitches, decent sized football pitches, are there in Guam, Scott? Because we could do the Champions League over there, surely.
Well, there's three on the entire island. One of them's artificial, and the other's at a high school. But you could do worse than plonking teams. There's certainly before it became really popular for clubs just to go to Okinawa and Kyushu in recent times. About a decade or so ago, clubs regularly went to Guam. Actually, you'd have four or five. Kind of teams there. You'd have teams go, I remember when I was starting out at the TV station in Australia, I remember Kyoto came down, Urawa came down to Australia, quite a few teams came down. And of course, the great man himself, when I was actually on Guam, whenever it was 3 or 4 years ago, I ran into the great man, King Kazu, in the airport. And he still goes now every year. He goes with his personal trainer and he spends, pretty much a month or so down in Guam doing all his own individual training stuff. It's good enough for the king. it's good enough for the ACL.
Absolutely works. Yeah, it works for me. And yeah, I remember seeing him on You Bet GFC, I think. Yeah, they have a camera following him around basically every year. So yeah, he's well aware of his excursions to Guam. So okay, what sort of a time frame would you be expecting any sort of concrete news out of the AFC, or are they just going to be playing things by ear like the J League has been, and gradually pushing back deadlines? I mean, their hand is surely going to be forced by, as we've been talking about, the travel bans and things like that. Surely at some point in the near future, the penny will have to drop for them. And as you say, the 2020 version of the Champions League will just have to become a thing of the past.
Yeah, but I mean, they're in a real tricky situation, right? Because they can plan all they want, but it's not really in their hands, any of it at all. So they need to wait and I guess, yeah, look at how things are playing out. But we're now, we're in the middle of the year already, right? So, and you, like I said, the absolute earliest you can start playing in the West is October. So, I mean, it's not happening. It's just not happening. So, and you're going to have a rush for all these other leagues to get through fixtures and everything else. So, I think, yeah, the AFC just needs to find a workaround, and I'll be happy to trademark my ACL theory alongside my love in the time of Corona theory, and then they can pay me for sorting out their competition for them for next year. But you know, they've always talked about ways to get other teams in it. Yeah, could be a great way to do it, and you know, then it could lead to even further changes if you've got a couple of upsets along the way from the minnows. It could be good. And Sam, am I right? This was how the European Cup was run, right? For the first, the first decade of it, wasn't it? It was just a straight knockout with only the champion teams that were in there?
Yeah, for a long time it was. And then there was a period where we had two group phases, so I don't want it to go down that route if that's the way we're going. But yeah, every good cup competition is straight knockout, in my opinion, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, so... yeah, hopefully that's the way that'll go, and they'll all go bar the Emperor's Cup, which is a really revolutionary idea. Maybe we could just do that. Maybe you could just put Guangzhou and Al Hilal straight into the semi-finals alongside FC Barcelona and whoever the pub team is from the Northern Marianas or whatever. That would just adopt the Emperor's Cup approach to the ACL.
Talking of the Emperor's Cup, between us, we've now revolutionised the ACL and the Louvain Cup. So what do you think about the new proposals for the Emperor's Cup this season?
That's completely absurd. I mean, it's one of the fucking stupidest things I've ever heard. It's like, it's just completely, it's so bizarre that, yeah, I'm still not quite sure I can get my head around it right now. I mean, either scrap the season or just play it. Like, The thing that's complicating everything is that the J League has a separate deal, a separate broadcasting arrangement, because the Louvain Cup, as you know, is not part of the DAZN package, right? So if it was part of the DAZN package, the Louvain Cup would have just been completely scrapped, or it would have been really heavily reduced. But instead, they're taking what is not just one of Japan's most important football tournaments, but one of Asia's and one of the world's, actually. The Emperor's Cup is one of the oldest cup competitions anywhere on the planet. And you know, just I mean, prepared to kind of run that into the ground, to what I think is the benefit of maintaining the Louvain Cup, because you've got a separate broadcasting arrangement that's bringing in separate kind of revenue. So they can't, in their minds, they can't just kind of scrap that, or they're going to lose a hefty chunk of their revenue. So yeah, I understand you know money and all of this, but at some point, yeah, the integrity of the competition, particularly one that provides an entrant for the ACL, is extremely important. And it's just it's just a completely bizarre way of doing things. I mean, yeah, you just got to wonder what kind of state they're in. The good thing was, you know, they could still go out and drink in bars and restaurants at the time, so they probably had a really heavy session on the cans, and this was the best that they could come up with, and it seemed to wash at the time, and then they announced it the next day.
Yeah, well, I don't think we'll ever be able to truly get our heads around that idea. But anyway, all right, well, yeah, I think we've solved at least some of the world's problems over the course of the last 45 to 50 minutes, Scott. So, yeah, tremendous to be speaking with you again. Sam, just as a quick aside, are you on K-League duty then this coming weekend? Or I presume Football Radar probably already have a stable of K-League analysts, but if that is the case, is there anybody you want to shout out for our listeners to follow on Twitter over the coming days?
Yeah, let me just get his Twitter up. I don't get it.
I mean, yeah, we don't want to steal any of K-League United's thunder. Obviously, we love Ryan Walters and Scotty Whitelock, etc. But, yeah, Sam's got to do the toe the company line here. Football Radar, obviously, toes in all different football ponds across the globe. So those guys will be chomping at the bit, I presume, to be getting football back and obviously watching it from a very safe distance.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. If you want to check him out, it's FR Football A Lee. So it's Alex Lee. He's our K-League analyst. I'm sure he's delighted to get some football back up and underway, and I'll have to watch from afar.
All right, fair enough then. Yeah, I don't suppose DAZN probably don't have the K-League contract, do they, Scott? So
I was thinking that exact same thing, and I caught up with a friend of the pod, Alex Bishop, last week, and we were musing over that exact same idea, because a lot of people here, you know, certainly anecdotally, are cutting their DAZN subscriptions, and yeah, you would have thought rather than every episode of Captain Tsubasa, it might have been better to get the K-League, and surely this is the perfect market, isn't it, for the K-League? So yeah, there hasn't been any announcement yet, but yeah, you really would have thought that it would have been the perfect kind of thing, but who knows?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And very nice you mentioned Alex there. I did want to mention before we wrapped up that on Tuesday night, the boys from FC Tokyo Kai Guys, Alex and Thomas, along with frequent guest of the pod, Dan Orlowitz, did a watch along of the 2008 Tokyo Derby. I popped on for about 3 or 4 minutes in between dessert and bath time for my kids, and the boys seem to be having a very nice time. I came on right after Naotake Hanyu's worldie of an equaliser. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to stick around for the winner, an 89th minute winner for FC Tokyo against Tokyo Verde, but the boys seem to be having a nice time there. And Scott, you watched a fair bit of their chatter, not so much the game, while you're in the park.
It was really good. They were having a great time. Had a couple of beers on the go, and they're commenting on the game, taking some questions. I think they'll be doing a few other things like that. So give them a follow, and it's always good. The community that we have of football fans in Japan, it's really good, you know, particularly in these corona times, to see everybody coming together like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, so obviously if you want to follow along with Alex and Thomas, FC Tokyo Kai Guys, K-A-I-G-U-I-S, there obviously isn't a massive amount of FC Tokyo news at the moment, but I think we're hoping that a poll that they ran on their Twitter account played some sort of a role in this game getting chosen for a DAZN replay. They listed off 4 classic FC Tokyo games. I don't think this was the actual winner of the poll, but yes, it was the one that DAZN chose, so good on them, and good on DAZN if it was a part of the reason why they chose that game. All right then, we'll leave it there for now. We've covered a fair bit of ground across the 3 competitions, although the Emperor's Cup will continue to leave us scratching our heads. But anyway, Scott, we'll leave it there. So great to catch up with you again. We obviously wait to see what happens with the resumption of training at J-League clubs, and then whether FIFA Pro sharpen their talons and get stuck into the J-League. We'll wait and see. But yeah, we know that we heard it first from you, as we did love in the time of Corona.
That's it. I'm really now thinking very carefully about this romance with these magnet men. sketching things out. We're going to have a kind of a homoerotic novel coming your way very shortly.
All right, we definitely need some football back. We've got far too much time on our hands. But anyway, yeah, great to catch up with you again, Scott. And Sam, terrific to speak with you again, of course. And look forward to doing so again next week.
Always a pleasure. Thanks again for having me, and I look forward to reading the novel, Scott.
Cheers, sir.
Actually, Scott, you want to do the outro?
Yeah, I do. Thanks, as always, to Sam Robson. Thanks to Scott McIntyre. Thanks to Love in the Time of Corona, and to you listening wherever you are. And we'll be back again shortly. And also thank you to all the patrons who support the podcast. That's always greatly appreciated. Make sure that you listen to the sister pod down on J2, doing a great job there. Until next time, it's bye for now. Our friend from Matsumoto, and who were the other main? Oh, Ficadenti. Yes. I'm going to put them in my novel.
Yeah.
The J Talk Podcast.